Kataksha Kirana Chanta
Naman Mohabdhaye
Namaha Naman Mohabdhaye Namaha
Anantam Nanda Krishnaya
Jagan Mangala Murtaye
Ahamasmi Sada Bhami
Kadachinaham Apriyaha
Brahmeva Hamatasiddham
Sachidananda Lakshanam
Ahamasmi Sada Bhami Kadachinaham Apriyaha Brahmaiva Hamatasiddham Sachidananda Lakshanam We did the Sambhavita. Aham Asmi Sada Bhami Kadachit Na Aham Apriyaha Brahma Eva Aham Ataha Siddham Sachidananda Lakshanam. So we did the first line. Aham Asmi Sada Bhami. I always am and I always shine. Means I always am. And the conscious being, the being that I am, is consciousness itself. So it is Svata Siddham, self-evident. Svata Siddham, self-evident. Svaprakasha, prakasha means light. So it is its own light. So consciousness is its own experience without any duality. If I got rid of the whole creation, the me experience would be what's left. Right? And I say me experience because words like consciousness or awareness or existence are very abstract terms. And so these are not, we're not talking about something abstract. These are words that are meant to land on the me experience that I take to myself to be right now, except I've added on to this sense of self, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the thoughts, the moods, emotions, all of this. But I am there as the adhishtanam of all of these things. So this word adhishtanam is so important. The word adhishtanam has no meaning unless mithya is understood. Mm-hmm. Mithya has no meaning unless the adhishtanam is understood. These two words go together. So the adhishtana is what has to be there in order for, that gives mithya its being, its truth. So the rope is the adhishtanam, the snake is mithya, right? So the rope is satyam, that which really exists. The snake is mithya. It depends 100% on the rope for its being. So here, I am the adhishtana, satchit, the sada, the one who is always here as I am, not the I, but just the I am points to my own being. And my being is conscious being, you know, self-evident. So I think also another word, the best word we were talking this morning, the best word for understanding myself as conscious being is to understand the meaning of self-evident. Conscious, when I say I am consciousness or a conscious being, the words in our vocabulary are so tied with knowership. I am conscious of something. I know something. So if I say I am a conscious being, then immediately the mind thinks, well, I am the knower. You know, because I'm a conscious being, I am the knower. I am the subject. If I think I'm the subject, I am the knower. And so this idea of knowership belonging to me, to my being, has to be negated. Right? And so, because if you think about it, just to kind of sit with this for a minute, I am a seer with my eyes because I have eyes. That's why I'm a seer. If my eyes are blind, I'm no longer a seer. I am, and I am self-evident conscious being, but I'm not a knower in terms of seeing. Same with every sense organ. I'm not a hearer if I'm deaf, right? So I'm not a knower if this particular instrument is not functioning. So same with all five sense organs. If the instrument is not functioning, I don't have the experience of knowership without the instrument. So now think of it like this. The mind itself, without the mind, without the vritti, I also don't have the experience of knowership. Now, this thought is known, this thought is known, this thought is known, this emotion is known, this emotion is known, this emotion is known. The mind has to be there, right? And then the mind, because the mind is there, enjoying my own being, consciousness, which illumines it, the mind, any vritti that you have, vritti means any thought modification that you have, is made up of nama-rupa, means the name form that's involved in the content of the vritti, whatever you're looking at, and also conscious being, right? So now, say in any given experience I have, from the standpoint of the mind, are you going to take yourself, for instance, if I'm looking at my iPhone here, I am aware of my iPhone through my sense organs. My mind is in my, I'm getting a vritti of this iPhone, and all everything surrounding it. So now I have a vritti of the iPhone. And the iPhone is known, right? The iPhone is known. Okay. Now, how am I going to account for myself here? Because the iPhone is known. This is a fact. The iPhone is known. Okay. Now, who am I in reference to this iPhone, which is known? Well, I am the conscious being because of which the iPhone is known. So I am the knower of the iPhone. That's how it works, right? Because every vritti has the satchit conscious being, right? And it has the object, the nama-rupa. So you have name and form plus conscious being. Every single vritti, the name and form keeps on changing, conscious being remains the same. Right? But who am I in this whole thing? In reference to the iPhone, the iPhone is known, then how do I account for myself? I'm the knower of the iPhone, right? So this knower-known construction is something that is taking place because I have to identify myself in reference to the known iPhone or to the known thought, whatever it may be. What part of this thought am I going to identify with? I'm going to identify with me, the conscious being. But me, the conscious being, in relationship to the known iPhone, is going to be the knower of the known iPhone. This is language. It's just language, right? But in reality, what is really there is that the iPhone is known, the vritti is known, and conscious being is known. And then what is really there, we have to go a step back from that, what is really there is conscious being, me, is known, is self-evident. And when the vritti comes, the self-evident nature of me, the vritti enjoys. The knownness of me is enjoyed by the vritti. The knownness of me is enjoyed by the iPhone. So knownness, the knownness, conscious, self-evident, conscious me, is the constant in every experience. It never moves, it never changes. It is the adhishtana of the universe. It's the adhishtana of the entire universe. The universe exists, when you think of the universe, think of it like this. Time, space, and everything in it. Every single thing, time, space, and every objectifiable thing, whether it be on a physical level or a subtle level, whether it be a mood or emotion or a fantasy or an imagination or a memory or a thought or an intellection, whatever you happen to be thinking about or reading or studying, all of these are nama-rupa, and they go on changing. One thought replaces the next, replaces the next, replaces the next. Nothing replaces conscious being. Nothing replaces self-evident me. In fact, nothing touches self-evident me. To understand the satya-mitya relationship, mitya, this is the definition of mitya. it is that which depends upon something else for its being 100%. That means itself in its own right, if you were to remove the adhishtana, it would not be there. Right? Just think of pulling out the rope or pulling out the clay out of the pot or pulling existence out of an experience. It wouldn't exist then. You pull the existence, the being, out of the experience, any experience. So this goes way beyond rope, snake, and clay pot. Because rope, snake, and clay pot are just examples of the real satya-mitya relationship. But we're talking about the satya-mitya relationship in reference to the whole universe, in reference to myself. What is satya? What is the adhishtana? You know, and what is dependent upon it. And why we even have to come up with a satya-mitya thing is because everything in the creation, and this doesn't matter whether you're in Advaita Vedanta or Buddhism or anyone that has this type of analysis of the creation, you cannot establish its being. That's why we say mitya. We have the experience. You can't negate the experience to say that it's non-existence. But you can't establish that it has any being of its own. Because it doesn't. Because it comes into being and goes out of being. But who is the being that it comes into and goes out of? That being can only be one. It can only be one. It can only be one because if it's two, we're in duality. Mm. If we're in duality, it's mitya. There's no way around that. If you're in duality, you're in change, you're in time. Right? You can't be in duality and not in time. You can't be in duality and in space. So if there's two of you, then you're both objects within time and space, and therefore you're subject to birth and death, and therefore you're mitya, and therefore the being that you have, that you experience is dependent. The nama rupa, the name and form that you're experiencing as yourself, is actually dependent on something that is totally free of you, mm-hmm. of what you've taken to be yourself, because you come into being and go out of being. So there can only be one of me, unless I'm a nama rupa, unless I'm a name and form. If I have name and form, then there can be an infinite number of me. But if I am free of name and form, the subject, which is by definition non-objectifiable, the subject cannot be objectifiable. If it's the instant it's objectifiable, it is the object. Right? And so our problem here, the great moha, the great confusion, is that I'm always taking the objects to be the subject. Mm. Right? Because they're doing a dual duty, in a sense. My eyes as an instrument see and become a knower, but I illumine the eyes. I'm aware of the eyes. So when the eyes are seeing, they become the subject of the thing that is seen. Mm. But then those eyes themselves are seen. They're objectified. So now I can't say they're the subject, I have to say they're an instrument that is illumined by the subject. So I can say, well, it's because of my mind that I'm aware of the eyes. You know, my mind uses the eyes, they're an instrument for my mind. So then, in reference to the eyes or the sense organs, my mind is the subject and the eyes are the object, right? So what was the subject is now seen to be the object. So it's all called an instrument, not the subject. But now the mind is in the same condition. It is the subject in reference to the eyes that it's illumining, for instance. But the mind is also known. It is also objectified. It also changes. I'm aware of its changing. I'm aware of one vritti replacing the next, replacing the next, replacing the next. If I ask you, what were you just thinking about? So, well, I was thinking about this and that, this and that. Because it's objectified. If it is functioning as the subject, you know, in reference to the eyes or to the sense organs or the buddhi in reference to its analysis of its experiences. But whether it be the manas or the buddhi or whatever function of the mind is there, it also is objectified. So it's not the pratyagatma. The pratyagatma is that innermost self. And what they mean by innermost, again, not a pea in a pod, what they mean by innermost is it cannot be objectified. You can't go any farther. There's no subject-object relationship there. And so that is the nature of the subject. But if it can't be objectified, if I can't be objectified into a subject-object relationship, I'm not in time. I don't exist within time and space. I become the adhishtana, the thing which all of these things within time and space must depend on in order to be. Because they themselves have no being of their own, because they come into being and go out of being, every experience. So all experience must depend upon me as their adhishtana, because it can't be broken down any further when you get to that ultimate subject. So I am that ultimate subject that is sada. Sada means I always am and I always shine, because the nature of being itself is consciousness. Consciousness is not objectifiable. Being is not objectifiable. Being is consciousness. Once you're talking about something that's not objectifiable, that does not exist in duality, there's not going to be two. You can't have a little being on this side and a little consciousness over here. Because there's no space. There's no time, there's no space for there to be consciousness and being. Consciousness is being, being is consciousness. So when I say, and this is how we talk about ourselves, I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being. We use all of these words. But then we think, but who am I? Who is this conscious being? Am I really the body? Does that mean I'm only going to live for a certain number of years and then die? You know? Am I going to transmigrate this conscious being? Then am I going to transmigrate and take body after body after body? You know? Who am I? Who am I, this conscious being? You know? What happens to me when I die? So I have there's no question about me being a conscious being, but what is the nature of the conscious being? Is it subject to birth and death? Will it die when the body dies? Is it subject to transmigration? What is the relationship of this conscious being that I am to the conscious being that you are? What is the relationship to the conscious being that I am to the conscious being that God is, if there's a God? So that is the situation. Conscious being, the me, the conscious being, when we use this abstract word, which we have to be careful of, it has to land on me. I have to recognize that in every experience that I have, without any exception, I am always there. Not somebody else. Now, that's not true in terms of vritti. I have this vritti, and then I have this vritti. I've had billions and billions of vrittis. Now I'm having this one. Now I'm having this one. Now I'm having this one. They replace each other. You say, even in psychology we talk, how many vrittis do we actually have? How many thoughts, how many perceptions are we actually having? If the perceptions are pouring in by the billions, they're pouring in by the billions, and our mind can never process all of that, so it's all just going into the unconscious. So we have a huge reservoir of memories that are pouring in that we could never, never process. And so we have these filtering systems that allow us to function in the world. So we have vritti after vritti after vritti after vritti after vritti, each one replacing the other, being stored over here and stored over there and stored over there. Can you be any one of them? You know, which one of them are you? They only have the most momentary existence. Which one are you? Of all the billions and billions and billions of vrittis, where are you stored? Well, I'm this little one. For me, there's no vrittis. You know? So the me you have to recognize, okay, what do I mean by me? I mean the one who's me, the one who is present to every experience that I have. We have to differentiate that me and recognize that I am the one who never changes. I am the constant. I am the Adhishtana. I am the very Satchit conscious being which all of these experiences in the whole universe, because there cannot be more than one of me. So that means I am Ishwara, the self that I am, is the self of all beings. Right? It's the self of the entire creation. It is Ishwara. This self is Ishwara. This body-mind-sense organs is part of Ishwara. Because this body-mind-sense organs belongs to this whole creation. It's part and parcel of the creation. It's like if you have a dream, it's not like your body enters the dream after the dream is there, so it's some separate entity from the dream. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely like a cell in the body. It's very much part of the dream, right? Which depends upon the Satchit conscious being for its existence. Not just you in the dream, but the whole dream. The whole dream depends equally upon you. It's you, the Atma, the self of the dream. Just think about this for a minute. You have a dream. You are a character in the dream. This character in the dream has body, mind, sense organs, right? And it has, if we do this viveka, this discrimination, it recognizes that the self that illumines the body, mind, sense organs, right, itself isn't objectifiable. Right? Now, that self that illumines, this little dream character recognizes, this self that is me, that is illumining, and the Adhishtana of this body, mind, sense organs, that this self is the self of everybody's body, mind, sense organs. It is the self of the whole dream. In fact, it's the whole dream that comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. I am the one non-dual Atma of the dream. And when we look back on our dream, we can understand that. I would think that when you look back, you remember your dream, you don't say, I had a dream, you know, and I entered the dream. Nobody entered the dream. There was no entry. The body, mind, sense organs of the dream character was part and parcel of the whole dream, and the whole dream comes from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me. I am the self, the Adhishtana, of the entire dream. And so what that means is that my being, the self-evident conscious being that I am, right, is as much the self as the dream iPhone, as it is of the dream chair, of the dream sun, of the dream jiva, as the dream animal. There's only one self, right? There's no preference there. There is no preference between my being the self of the iPhone and my being the self of the jiva. There's no preference. From the standpoint of the Atma, I'm not any of those things. I'm the self of all of them and not any one of them. Right? Because the dream comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me, and nothing happens to me. And I am not a knower. The dream, the self of the dream, just like this, myself of this universe, myself of the dream, is not a knower. It's the conscious being, the knownness, which the dream takes place in, and then the whole dream is known. But is knownness doesn't belong to the dream. It belongs to the self. And so who is Ishwara? In terms of your dream, who is Ishwara? You are the Ishwara of the dream. You, from the standpoint of the dream, you are Ishwara because the whole dream is known. So I'm sarvajnaha. I mean, I am, what do you call that in English? Omniscient. I am omniscient because the whole dream is known. That's Ishwara. The jivas within the dream, the individuals within the dream, they have limited minds. And so those limited minds reflect as though consciousness. And they'll say, I am this body, mind, sense organs. And this little character says, I am this body, mind, sense organs. I am a conscious being, and you are a conscious being, and you are a conscious being, and all the little animals are conscious beings, and we're all different one from another. But we're not all different from, we're all different one from another from the standpoint of the dream upadis, from the dream bodies. One dream body is different than another dream body is different than another dream body, and one dream mind is different, 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 different. Sense organs different, 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 different. Self. What about the self? Can't be different because it's not an object in the dream. Mm-hmm. It's the adhishtana of the whole dream. And the dream is mitya. Now this is so important because this, how it is in this, how this is in the dream is how it is here. We say the dream is mitya. When we say mitya, it means that all these namarupas, this universe, dream universe, totally depends for its being on the self. The self is the adhishtana. Right? Now, what does that mean experientially? Well, think about it. When you wake up, when you wake up from the dream, what is that like? The dream universe, all of the dream characters, the whole manifestation, right? That whole creation is gone. Just like it's gone. Now, okay, we all know that. You wake up from a dream, it's gone. Okay. But the incredible thing is that nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. Because nothing has happened. Mitya means it has no essential being. So all of these colors and all of these namarupas and all of this have no other being than me, than consciousness. And consciousness remains changeless. So what was there all along is still there all along when these namarupas go away. In terms of what was actually there, nothing has happened. You see that? That's what we mean by mitya, the satyam. Everything in understanding advaita or non-duality, everything lies in this understanding of satyam mitya. So you, in fact, all of these experiences that we're having, infinite number of experiences through our sense organs and our mind and all of these vrittis, all of these, you know, different variety of experiences, they're all taking place, they're all colorful, all kinds of things are happening. But they're happening, they're, all of this happening, you know, is not touching the adhishtana, the existence. Mm. It's not touching it, nor is it away from it, because it's mitya. It's neither touching, nor is it away from. And that's why when this mitya that has no being goes away, nothing has happened, because what is actually there is still there. And that is your experience when you get to wake up from a dream. That's the experience. It's the same in the waking state when you're having a daydream. The daydream can be long and involved and wonderful. It can be whatever, something you're enjoying. And then the daydream comes, somebody says, hey, you know, I see what you're doing. You're daydreaming. You're not listening. Okay, so, hey, you know, the daydream is gone, you know, then you're back. That whole world that you've just been a part of is gone. And nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. Nothing ever happens. Nothing ever happens to the self, no matter what is going on. Nothing happens, because it's the adhishtana, you know. The satya-mitya relationship is, everything is in that. You have to, but you have to not just intellectualize it, you have to recognize the fact of it, that all things, all these things are happening, going on, changing, sukha-dukha, the pleasure-pain, getting my way, not getting my way, all of the things that go on in samsara. All of this activity is going on, all of these emotions are flying around, absolutely nothing is happening. to your being. And nothing is happening to your being, but now we have to remember something else. When I said nothing is happening to your being, you are not a little pea in the pod. You have no body. The Atma is not a form. Yourself has no form. That means that yourself, this me, is not just contained in this body, looking out through the sense organs and looking out through the mind type thing. You're not contained at all. There's no containment at all. And so now, if you start to kind of contemplate on the truth reality of that, forget about, if you just kind of relax for a moment and be with your body, this body, you know, that you're aware of through your sense organs. That's why you're aware of your body. If your sense organs weren't functioning, you wouldn't be aware of your body. So your sense organs, because of your sense organs, you're also aware of this room. If you didn't have your sense organs, you wouldn't be aware of this room either. Right? And then also your mind has to be using your sense organs to be aware of the room, to be aware of the body. So now all of these things that you are aware of, right, in the vritti, in the thought modification, are illumined by awareness. Right? Like any thought I have, let me give you a better example that we're going to juxtapose against this, what I'm talking about now. Say I ask you to imagine a beautiful meadow mountain scene, and you just imagine it, you can see this, maybe there's some light clouds and the sun is there and you're all walking to the meadow. So you're imagining this whole scene and you're there in it with your friends walking through right now. If I tell you that in that imagination that you've just had, that whole imagination enjoys yourself as its adhishtana. That whole imagination exists in your being, in consciousness. You say, yeah, you know, this is not hard, right? If I have an imagination, that's my imagination, I am the self of that imagination. I am the self of everything in that imagination, right? That's not hard, is it? I don't think that's hard. I think that's easy. You have the imagination, and it can be very real. And you are the self of the whole thing. It's not just part of it. You don't say, well, I had this imagination, and then I entered into it, and I was walking around in this imagination. No, you are walking around in the imagination, but the one walking around in the imagination belonged to the imagination. And all the whole thing exists in me. Okay. So that's my relationship to that vritti, imaginal vritti. Now I have another vritti. Now we're going to, it's just a vritti. Vritti's vritti. Thought modification is thought modification. Now I have a thought modification of this room using my sense organs to give me a thought modification of vritti of this room. In which all of you are in the room, and this body, mind, sense organs is in the room. The whole thing is objectified. Not just you, but my body, my mind, my sense organs, my moods, my emotions, my thoughts, the ahankara. This whole scene, you know, is known. It's there in the vritti. True? Mm-hmm. Okay. If that is true, then I illumine this vritti. I, conscious being, the knownness that I am, right? The whole vritti enjoys equally. Like, is there any holes? Like, here's the vritti, right? The vritti is of this room. This thought modification, right, is known because of conscious being. So is there any part of this room that has more or less of me, conscious being? There isn't, right? There isn't. Just like if you imagine a meadow, there's not any part that has more or less me. Everything in the meadow enjoys me equally. It's mitya, and I'm the satyam, I'm the adhishtana. And so, now this is what I want to juxtapose. When you are thinking about the meadow imagination, and having that imagination, you recognize that you're not contained in any part of it. Right? That the whole thing exists in you. That's very easy to see. But here, when again it's another, just another vritti that I'm experiencing, the fact that I am present equally in every part of that experience is not so self-evident. Because of the Dehatma Buddhi, because I'm so convinced that I am just body, mind, sense organs, and I've superimposed knowership on myself also. And so it's much more difficult, even though this is a vritti, this is a vritti, the meadow is a vritti, this is a vritti, brought about by sense perception, one's imaginal, imaginal scene, this is an objective scene, brought about through my sense perception, but still, vritti, vritti. Okay? But with this vritti, for some reason, I feel so contained, because I have this body, mind, sense organs, which is responsible for the knowership of all of this. And that gives me the illusion that my being is contained in this body, looking out through my sense organs. But in fact, now think, your being, this me, it's not a knower. It is knownness. It is self-evident being. I am. And there is nothing in this experience right now that is away from that. And so just try for a moment. I don't know if this will work for you, but it works for me. Just put your being in the middle of the room instead of in this body. Because the me isn't contained. Just let the me just spread out. Because that's the reality, actually. In the reality is you are not contained. The sense of me is something that is pervasive to every experience that I have. I cannot have an experience that is away from this sense of me. So we walk around thinking that the sense of the me belongs in this body, whereas in fact the whole universe enjoys the sense of me, and every single experience I have, that me is there as the very center and pervading out as though, because there's no time and space from the standpoint of me, but there's no place I am not in terms of this spatial dimensional reality. So that's it's a nice walking meditation to do also, but you can do it just sitting here. You can recognize that you're not contained. Your body is contained, your mind is contained, your sense organs are contained, all that's within duality. But your sense, this very personal sense of me, is not contained. It's a good experiment to do. So what he says here, I'm going to the third line, I'll do the ananda later. He says, therefore, because I always am, means non-objectifiable, and I am conscious self-evident. Therefore, I am Brahman. Therefore, it is siddha. It is established that I am Brahman. It's established because the self, the pratyagatma, that innermost subject, cannot be objectified. And if it cannot be objectified, it cannot be contained within time and space. Time and space itself are objectified. If I can't be contained within time and space, there is no change for me, nor is there any limitation for me. That means that I am infinite. I'm infinite. Now, there's another thing to this. Brahman means the self which is infinite. But you can say, yeah, but I can be the one non-dual infinite self, and then there's this creation. That's two. But the creation is mithya. This objectifiable creation is mithya. It has no independent being, because it comes into being and goes out of being. So it can't count as two. something that has no being, you can't say, well, there's the rope, and then, of course, we have the snake. That's two. You can't say, there's the clay, and then there's the pot. What we can say is there's a rope there, and we experience a snake on it, but the snake is mithya. It has no being of its own. The pot is there, but really the only thing there is clay. The pot is mithya. It has no being of its own. We can say, this whole creation is there, but it's mithya. It has no being of its own. I am the being. Once I say that, everything that exists within time and space is mithya. It has no independent being of its own because everything is coming into being, going out of being. Then I have to be Brahman, non-dual Brahman, because there is no second thing. Once you say satyam mithya, or the adhishtanam, I am the adhishtanam, not objectifiable, this creation that is objectifiable, that exists within time and space, is coming into being and going out of being, infinitely divisible, it has no being of its own. So there's not non-dual me and mithya, to make two. There's non-dual me, non-objectifiable me, the one self that is there, and everything else is mithya. So there's not two. I have to be Brahman, because there's not room for a second Brahman. There's not room for a second me. To have a second me, I have to be mithya. I have to be within time and space. So there is no second me. If there's no second me, I am Brahman. Either I don't exist, which is not true. I can't say I don't exist. I either exist or I am mithya. If I'm mithya, I must depend upon something which does exist. And so what gets categorized as mithya is everything that exists within time and space, that comes into being, goes out of being. That is mithya. Just by the fact it changes makes it mithya. That's enough. I could erase the whole creation. The whole creation is mithya once you say it's objectifiable. If you say it's objectifiable, we're immediately in duality. If you're in duality, you're in change. Things come into being and goes out of being. They have no being of it. It has no being of its own because it's bordered by non-existence. Mm-hmm. It cannot be. It has to be depend on something. So, in the analysis of me, everything except conscious, self-evident conscious being is demoted to mithya. If you want to consider it a demotion, it's demoted to mithya. Because it changes, comes into being, goes out of being. So I am Brahman because there is only Brahman. It's not like, oh, I am Brahman? No. There is only Brahman. There is only Brahman. And Brahman is self-evident, conscious being. And that is me. Because there is only me. See what I mean? So he says, therefore, it is established by these two lines. He did the ananda, which I like to do that by itself. Therefore, it is established that I am Brahman, because I always am and I always exist. Therefore, I am Brahman. Brahman, which is characterized by Satchidananda Lakshanam. That word Lakshanam? Mm. The word Lakshanam means that which uniquely defines something. That particular definition cannot be used for anything else. That's what makes a definition called a lakshana. It can only define that one thing. So there's no confusion. You can only be talking about that. So the lakshana for Brahman is sat chit ananda. Sat means it is existence, chit, which is consciousness. Ananda here means ananta. I'll talk about that more next class. Ananta, limitless, non-dual. Brahman is sat, chit, ananda. Satyam, jnanam, anantam. Satyam is the sat, jnanam is the chit, Ananda is the Ananta. Limitless. If you say something is conscious being, which is limitless, the instant you say limitless, there's not room for anything else. You can't have conscious being and something else, because conscious being itself is limitless. So there's no more room. No more room for anything else. So that means all that is here is Satchitananda Lakshanam Brahman. And this vast array of duality that we experience, we're not saying we don't experience, we say it is mithya. The whole Vedanta is satya mithya. Without understanding satya mithya, you didn't go nowhere. Because then you have all these funny ideas about having to negate your experience. You don't have to negate your experience. The fact that the experience is mithya, it doesn't touch you. It doesn't touch you because it has no being of its own. Right? And to have being of its own, it can't have non-being on either side. That means, and it doesn't have non-being on either side, that means it is always the same. So the definition of satyam, which is ultimately the adhishtana, is that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future, that which always is. So that's why the sada asmi, aham asmi, I always am. Right? And I am always self-evident. That sada aham bhami. I always, bhami means without a pramana, without any means of knowledge, I am self-evident. I don't need a pramana. I don't need a means of knowledge to illumine me. Whereas everything else in the creation is that. It needs a means of knowledge to be known. Without the operation of a means of knowledge, like your eyes or your sense organs or your inferences, without a means of knowledge, that thing cannot be known. It's not self-evident. I am the only thing that is self-evident. I don't require a pramana because I am conscious being. The conscious being that I am, simply, I simply am. And I have no sharira. I am a sharira, without a sharira, without a body. I don't feel like I don't have a body or I have a body. It's totally irrelevant. What makes you feel embodied or without a body, there's no such thing. You are you. And the you that you are has no concept of having a body or not having a body. You're the non-dual Brahman, right? You are what is. There's nothing that you're not. There's nothing missing. That's the word I want to say. There's nothing missing. I have a body, I don't have a body. Nothing missing. It's just like, give it just a quick example. When you have a dream at night, sometimes you have a body in the dream and you're experiencing the dream through the sense organs of the character that you're identified with. Right? Often that's the case. And frequently is the case is that you're aware of the whole dream without being embodied as a character in that dream. Then you're the Ishwara. You don't have a body. You're the whole because you're not identified with the body. Sometimes you're a jiva in the dream, sometimes you're Ishwara in the dream. Ishwara, just the whole dream is known to you, but you're not limited by a body in the dream. That's Ishwara. Sometimes you're limited by your identification with a body in the dream, then you're experiencing that dream through the sense organs. Then you feel like a limited being. But in reality, whether you're the Ishwara of the dream, you're unembodied, or you're embodied in the form of a jiva, in either, both are equally mithya. The Ishwara upadhi is mithya. The jiva upadhi is mithya. The truth is Brahman. Brahman is the very self of Ishwara, the very self of the jiva. Now, you don't feel when you're the Ishwara in the dream that, I don't have a body. Or, my body's too big. You don't feel anything. Because it's all mithya. It doesn't make any difference whether you're a body in the dream or you're the whole dream. Both are equally mithya, and you are always you. Your sense of self is not embodied. You just don't think of it like that because you've always superimposed your sense of self on a body, but it has nothing to do with the body. So now we can just walk around knowing we have no body. No body to grow old. You have no mind. You have a body and you're free of a body. You have a mind, you're free of a mind. You have emotions, you're free of the emotions. You know? Both are there. That's why there's this Gita verse, seeing I don't see, hearing I don't hear, blinking I don't blink. This goes through about 6 or 7 of the 2 verses. Walking I don't walk, talking I don't talk, sleeping I don't sleep. Because from the standpoint of the upadhi, these things are taking place. And they are only you. And you are completely free of them. That's the satyam mitya. So we'll do the ananda, the second line. This verse is like the major verse of the whole. This is the major verse of the whole Advaita Makaranda. The whole vision is in this verse. It's a really amazing verse. Swamiji just spends 3 days on it or so. 3 or 4 classes on it. Swasti prajabhyah paripalyantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmanebhyah shubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini tesho yamcho varahitah Ramana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukha bhag bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amritangamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Hari Om.